Ahoy, Vachon. Or as the French say, Vachon. I'm Brian Brown, and this is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less. You're listening to Voice of Vachon, which is VOV in text talk. Our call letters are KVSH. That's Kavish, not Kvetch. At 101.9 on your FM dial.
And that was the voice, of course, of our progenitor, Brian Brown, whose birthday is today. This is not only Super Tuesday, but this is...
Oh, my gosh. Brian.
Yeah, Brian would have been 85 today. I suppose in some sense he is 85. Yeah. And I am your host for today, Michael Shook, and as Brian used to say, still a half bubble shy of plum.
I always love that.
And I was thinking, I thought of that this morning, with a 6-foot door level, if that's a half bubble shy of plum,
that's
I'm
about 4 inches, isn't it?
Well, not that much.
Well.
But a good 3/4 to an inch anyway.
Yeah. Observable.
Oh, and I'm also still working on the landscape. There are worse things in life, to be sure. Across from me is our mood-modulating slinger of sound and former airline pilot, Truman O'Brien.
Thank you. That's much better.
I dropped the Montana text. Yeah, I got the sense it wasn't...
And of course, you just brought it back.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's so much fun to say. I always wanted a cowboy name like that.
Well, you know, I told you that when I was in Texas, I moved to Montana in January.
Oh, great.
I had seen snow maybe twice, maybe three times in my life. And I got to Montana, my first day of school, there were 3 feet of snow, and it was about 20
Holy
below.
Cow.
I said, this has got to be the worst place in the world.
Ooh,
it was pretty, but it
awakening.
Was cold.
Yeah.
There's a reason that Montana and Wyoming have such small populations.
Indeed.
To Truman's left is the ever-present negative space of both Bruce Hallman and his absent chair, the former down under, the latter whereabouts unknown. To the left again is the Dixie Darling and Georgia Cracker, musician and poet Lynn Kerrigan.
Oh, how sweet. Good morning.
Good morning.
People haven't called me darling in a long time. I miss
darling.
It. Darling.
Darling.
Drop the G. Darling.
Darling.
That's right. It's like in Atlanta. You know, if people are from Atlanta, if they drop the T in Atlanta, it's not like Montana or Texas where they roll the vowels. It's all vowels. It's Atlanta.
Atlanta.
There's hardly any consonants in it.
Oh, that's it. That's great. I love finding out these little things like that.
Is New Orleans similarly?
Well, that one you say all up in the front of your mouth. It's New Orleans. New Orleans.
Cynthia made the mistake one time of saying to somebody at in a clerk or something. The clerk asked her something, and she said, "Oh no, that's fine, hon. I don't need that because that's what you say in Louisiana and Texas, you know."
Yeah.
And got a glare back. I'm just glad I didn't say it. But
would have been a double whammy.
To the port side of Lynn is sailor, strategist, and indefatigable political activist, Indivisible Vachon's own Kevin Jones.
Still hanging in there.
Excellent. And rounding out the Briefly crew this morning is our wandering, roving reporter, journalist, sometime thespian, and Real Talk host, Susan McCabe. Welcome back from South Carolina.
I am so happy to be here. And I want you to know that I learned what the term bless your heart really means.
It's about time, darling.
It's right. I heard it a lot when I was in Charleston.
Yeah.
Not necessarily pointed at me, but bless your heart kind of means...
Yes, it does.
And
yes.
You.
Like, back off.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren used it on a clip with Steve Colbert.
That was hilarious.
I loved it.
It's hysterical. And all my my Southern relatives, I learned that, one night at a dinner. And they say, I said something, and they said, "Oh, well, bless your heart." And I thought, "Oh, that's it."
And you knew something was wrong, but couldn't quite tell what it was.
Doesn't quite sound like
it's the iron fist in the velvet glove.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, it is Tuesday, the 3rd of March, 2020, in the year of the twittering, tweeting twit. Question, is he Tweedledee or Tweedledum?
Oh, Tweedledum.
That's pretty...
Dumb.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solidly established. I don't know that there is any question. on the agenda here, COVID-19 Is the nation slipping into a kind of mania regarding this virus?
Yes.
People are stockpiling all kinds of food, hand sanitizer, face masks, and so on. So far, what I've read is that the virus has a mortality rate of about 2%, which is significant in that it's about 20 times the rate, the mortality rate of the flu we usually get. Still, the folks that are most at risk are like the other flu folks at risk, those with pre-existing conditions, and especially old people. Anybody got any thoughts on that? It's a tough time to figure out how to respond to all this, I think.
I'm just glad we're not old.
Yeah, right.
I'm just glad we're not immunocompromised. Some of us are.
I'm not sure about the old part, but
yeah,
I had to throw that in.
I'm not gonna speak to that. Okay. But I do share your hope. I do think, of course, our government once again has not done a lot to make it any better, in terms of not providing enough test kits.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
That just adds to the uncertainty of, well, how many cases are there out there and how do we know? And gosh, if I have a cough, do I have it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, I get the idea of trying to downplay, because if you look at the number of deaths from influenza, I mean, it's horrible.
They far outweigh it.
And I mean, it makes sense. But the way that they went about it was really stupid, I thought. I thought they, you know, they could have been a lot more forthcoming, just said, hey, look, folks, yep, it's coming. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not any worse than this. Or that, you know. Anyway,
and
well, instead of there's only five cases and it'll be disappearing here tomorrow.
No.
You got to be kidding me. Come on, guys.
Well, it's a, I'm looking, I just noticed there's a box of Clorox disinfecting wipes on the,
on the table. Thank God. I feel so safe now.
Well, there's two things that I thought of regarding the response of our government. One was Bill Gates, who you all know I have some problems with him and his philanthropy from time to time. He is nonetheless a really sharp guy. I think we can agree on that. And 5 years ago, he spoke at a conference and said, NATO is great because we've got this alliance of nations working together to counter any kind of military threat. He said, now what we need to do is create an alliance of nations worldwide to counter any kind of an epidemic. And he spoke extensively about that. And because, as he said, in a matter of a few days, a virus can go completely around the world now. The other thing about that, about the government's lack of interest in taking any action on that, was that the Trump administration cut massively funding for the CDC and their epidemiology and research and their testing. And so it's like, well, that in hindsight looks like a really stupid thing to have done.
We don't believe in science philosophy.
And that brings me real quickly here, Linda, just to putting Mike Pence, the vice president, in charge of this whole thing, and Paul Krugman writes, early in his political career, Pence staked out a distinctive position on public health by declaring smoking doesn't kill people. He's also repeatedly insisted that evolution is just a theory. As governor of Indiana, he blocked a needle exchange program that could have prevented a significant HIV outbreak, calling for prayer instead. And now, according to the New York Times, government scientists will need to get Pence's approval before making any public statements about the coronavirus. This is...
Well, that's just obscene and ridiculous and stupid.
Well, except, I mean, I agree, except they were trying to have one voice so that you don't have 16 different voices.
You can have one voice, I understand
as
that.
As long as it's...
messaging point, but here's my thought. Mm-hmm. This is faster than that. They don't need to not trust their science officials who can make the decisions about all of this stuff. They don't need to be spinning it, which is what's happening while it's going through Trump. It's no longer about facts. It's about propaganda. So the economy doesn't tank.
Exactly.
He's worried about the stock market. He's not worried about our health. But I do think we should take a moment to pray for the end of the coronavirus.
Yeah, yes. That's going to do a
lot. Yeah, that'll
do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just read here, which virus is deadlier? They think it's a bit more deadlier than the flu so far. But the thing that they point out is, on the average, the seasonal flu strain kills about, you were talking about this, 0.1% of people who have become infected. The 1918 flu, which was a very high mortality rate, was around 2%. But because it was so contagious, mm-hmm. you know, millions of people were infected. The thing that they point out here is that none of these numbers are going to be very accurate because it turns out that we don't know how many people who have had the coronavirus with mild symptoms or no symptoms. Mm-hmm. So consequently, they could have a very high infection rate, but the mortality rate based on that's going to be much lower. So they're thinking around 1.4%.
Can I just say the thing that I thought was most interesting about this coverage was the focus that's come out in the last couple of days about the difficulty in self-quarantining when you're a person who works at a very low-wage job where your employer is saying, you come to work or you're going to get fired.
Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to get paid.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you're certainly not going to get paid,
right?
But you're at the risk of being fired. And I think that, you know, Americans' capitalist system has gotten so lean, it forces people to go to work without much backup. And
with no backup.
Right. And so
really?
They feel like they have to go to work, you know, sure. to maintain their jobs. And, you know, we really need to look at having some cushion in our workforce where there's backup pools that can come in, you know, or people can, if they're sick, not have to come to work.
Or yeah.
There are organizations lobbying for both minimum wage for food service workers and low wage workers in addition to paid sick leave, but that does not exist right now.
Right. And in New York, I just heard that the minimum wage is still at $2 and change.
Yes. That's
and so people
cow.
People are barely scraping by.
When I got out of high school and went to Colorado, I got a job washing dishes until I got my job as a ski instructor. And I was
that's
making
right.
$1.25 then. That was
that's
we're talking
right.
1973, folks.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And it's how doubled since changed. Then.
Yeah. The whole thing with going to work when you're sick, before I got into the union, the Carpenters Union, and got medical benefits and, you know, a higher wage and everything, that was pretty much where I was at. And most of my friends, it was like, unless I had pneumonia or something, I was going to work. Mm-hmm. There was no cushion. Now, part of that was my responsibility to get more training and get into a good union job, but it's not always possible. It's not always. It's not so straightforward.
Yeah. And I think where we're at now, the interesting this coronavirus. Right, Susie and I have been going back and forth about this as well. So the fact that there's now community transferred instances of the coronavirus, right, meaning that a person who didn't travel to an affected area is, so they don't have that, that direct relationship. And I think what that means is that the disease, the virus transferred from somebody who had been to one of those areas to another person, and then on to a third or fourth or fifth person, and where the intermediaries didn't come down with symptoms or they were mild symptoms.
Right.
Exactly. And so now we're at a point where I think the going to work and et cetera is, I think, overshadowed in my mind by the fact that we now have this highly transmittable virus that's been around for probably weeks, if not months, mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. our area. And there's almost, like, how can you avoid it? I don't think you can at this point. So I think then it's the precautions, right? And I was actually at the library right before stopping by, and it was like four librarians I was talking to, and they were all at a respectable 6-foot distance from each other. They had their arms out and spacing.
Yes, which is what they say is the minimum distance you should be at talking
always,
to people that you don't know if they're sick or healthy.
I'm going
librarians.
Home.
Just back up a little.
Yeah.
back on.
Well, we have mic covers coming, folks, tomorrow, unfortunately. But they're going to be coming, so that we'll have mic covers so that you can take those off, so that the next person, you're not going to be getting your mouth up close to the microphone. So.
Cynthia and I are going to have to cancel yet another trip. We were going to go down and to Arkansas and visit her family, and visit her, especially to visit her 94-year-old mother. That is not going to fly any longer. Right. And of course, the airline is like, we're sorry, but we can't give you a dime back on those expensive tickets into Little Rock. Right? So,
yes.
Unless one of us was to come down with the COVID virus. So I told Cynthia that I would go around.
Sorry.
I would spend part of my afternoon after the show going licking doorknobs and you know, stuff like that.
Do they need a doctor's note for that?
I'm pretty healthy. I think they would need some sort
they
of...
probably would.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe there's a market in forged... never mind. Forget I said that.
Yeah. I think this could be a fundraiser.
We have to be morally upstanding here. My goodness. Okay, well... Susan, you circulated an interesting essay from I think that's The Week is an online publication, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
The Week is the name of it, to the Brieflys, and it was titled, It's 2020, Women Are Exhausted. And I, okay, well, what about that essay grabbed you? I thought I'd just throw that at you and let you have
it. Well, you know, I think the biggest takeaway for me was just the... demoralizing impact of the double standard that women live under constantly, especially in leadership roles and in being portrayed as snakes, emphasizing duplicity because one is female, being portrayed as unelectable or as too aggressive because they behave like men or speak straightforwardly. I think not only do women lose a lot this way, but the country loses a lot. Mm-hmm. We are losing good, solid leaders like Elizabeth Warren, who could be outstanding governors. To my mind, too, the way that we elect people in this country by the media, which means they have to be television stars, they have to be charismatic to the max. They what?
It was me. I was saying beauty queens.
Yes, right. is not the kind of personality that is good for governing the country. And we lose that. We lose that completely when we make women unelectable, unacceptable. And it's just the depth of misogyny in this country that is exhausting.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's what attracted me.
Yeah. Well, that's a it was a powerful article. I have to say, I thought she lives in San Francisco. I looked up a little bit about the author, and she's kind of it. I got the sense she's sort of locked into her own. We all live in our own little bubbles. We live in a bubble here on Vashon, where the whitest, oldest population in King County. Which I thought was interesting, and we're also one of the wealthiest, so we have our own kind of bubble going on. And I felt like it's really awful to have that double standard there. And I'm not trying to paint a picture of everything's going to be fine, but I was heartened because I thought, well, there to see that there is progress being made. It's like last week on the show, I said I made the comment that. Women have found their voice. I think really have found their voice. We have a whole another generation coming up. And I really don't sense that any of that is going to be rolled back now. And we've got, well, stay with me. It might be the darkness before the dawn. We've got, I looked up some stuff and four of the top CEOs in the country of defense contractors, of all things. Now imagine that, defense contractors.
That's interesting.
Are women. The Boeing division, Lockheed Marietta, Grumman, and I forget the other one. And the woman who just took over at Lockheed, I think was praised by her exiting male CEO as incredibly qualified, incredibly talented, and with the vision and drive to take this company where it needs to go. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, if at a company like that, the CEO has the wisdom to say, no, I have no, you know, this is going to work. So maybe that's just a ray of light on the horizon.
Well, and that's wanted a lovely ray. It is. We're also looking at the Supreme Court considering yet another abortion restriction law.
That's right.
And, you know, to my mind, that whole abortion thing about the government being involved in women's bodies is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I recently saw something that kind of flew by that was a law suggesting mandatory vasectomies. And I thought, hey, let's go for that one. Let's see how men feel about their bodies being invaded by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a mixed bag. I'll agree.
So I see the Lockheed example is just the proof of the pudding that not that there's equity, but that there is no basis for saying that a gender puts you in any more or less qualified, right, to be able to be effective in a range of positions. Yeah. And the thing that that I think of is when Pramila Jayapal talked about entitlements and the entitlements that for a democracy we need to put behind us. She didn't mention gender specifically, but she mentioned a lot of things that are along those lines, basically race. And I think the article, if you'd substituted woman for blacks or people of color and woman for maybe, you know, creed or race, I think the article probably rings true for a number of different groups. Mm-hmm. And so I think the entitlements that need to be addressed are perhaps the key, right, to moving forward. And I'm not saying that that's easy to do because we have a lot of buried history that takes a long time and some generations to remove. But I think that if we think about it in that way, we give ourselves a chance, right, I think, to mm-hmm. move forward, I hope.
Well, the thing that I think about, too, is that we have made gains, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's not been equal everywhere, though, in terms mm-hmm. of rising wages. I mean, white women still make a lot more than black women.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think is unique about this argument about women being tired and tired of the double standard has to do with reproduction, that women are the ones that have to be out of the labor force to give birth, and that, you know, we need flexible hours mm-hmm. and good family leave time. You know, we are making some progress with that, but I think it's a battle we have to keep fighting. It's very daunting to me to see not only the abortion law under attack again, mm-hmm. but also the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Because of the very weird, circuitous argument about when the Republicans forced the mandated coverage to go down, they're now saying that alone made the law constitutional.
My head is starting to spin on that one.
The arguments are so specious mm-hmm. and so strange and oddly organized that it's almost hard to keep track of what they mean. And I can't explain it to you. All I know is that they said at that time that you can't force American people to buy insurance. And so they got that taken out. And now they're saying without any, that you can't force the law now if there's not a public aspect, which I think is hilarious.
Is it? It can be really disheartening. I find myself thinking, well, where can we find common ground on this? I mean, for decades, there's been this argument over access to abortion, and for decades, there's been an argument over access to health care. And I look at, goodness knows, Europe is hardly, without its faults. And yet they've managed to do that. What is it in America that just seems to make us feel like, you know, it's every man and woman for him or herself and...
winner take all, capitalism.
Exactly. I think it's capitalism. And, you know, we were founded on this idea of the rugged individualist, meaning no matter what you do, if you win, it's okay. No matter who you step on, it's okay. And I think that is capitalism gone awry to its extreme. Everything is measured up against that economic wall. And if it doesn't have economic value, it's worthless. And I think that brings us to, Kevin, you mentioned all those groups, and it's not only a race, gender issue, it's a class issue as well.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
And I think the winner take all is also relevant, not just the rugged individualism, but, you know, we could have had a parliamentary system, right, which fosters cooperation amongst parties. Although I did hear just a footnote that Israel, I think, voted for the third time yesterday. I haven't heard the outcome. They're trying to make their system work. But the idea that, you know, if you, in a parliamentary system, right, if you get a majority, then you're got, you know, you move forward and establish a government. But if you don't, you cooperate. And, you know, I've had the good fortune to have worked with NATO, where they have to manage, you know, double-digit numbers of countries, aligning budgets and values and how they work together. And the degree of diplomacy is very striking. And I think that you need to live in that kind of a world where you recognize that diplomacy is a key to moving forward in any dimension, and to really appreciate it and to recognize the weakness in a system that is just, you know, one party take all.
That's an interesting thing, because that dynamic of all those small nations, cheek by jowl, who've overrun each other numerous times over the centuries, and maybe they just wised up. Maybe it took a few hundred years.
Well, I think it's really important to say to all of the, especially young people who think that the problem is capitalism itself. I don't believe that. I believe it's how we have structured capitalism, in particular, this recent shareholder capitalism, which has emerged in the 1980s under Reagan, when they were absolutely able to change the laws for businesses to say that they no longer had to worry about the safety of their products or their consumer satisfaction or anything but the shareholder earnings for their company. And all of a sudden, the money just went straight to the shareholders and straight to the top without looking at the downstream implications for people. And they have been huge.
Yeah, well said.
I think as we get more women into government, this is where I want to kind of weave this kind of back together, is that we're talking about inequality and inequities. But I do see that as we get more women in, I am really hopeful that we'll have more balance at looking at what's good for everybody, not just people at the top.
Yeah. I did want to go to this, you know, Super Tuesday day, and fortunately we get to pick some new leadership moving forward.
Yeah.
So I was out canvassing on Sunday and knocking on doors in Puyallup, in my old neighborhood, and it was intriguing. A number of people that we talked to, because we mentioned the nuances of the ballot, right, and the fact that with a primary, presidential primary, not a caucus, on the envelope, you have to check one or the other party of the correlating to the person that you selected. And that's the major reason that ballots are getting rejected, by the way, the major reason. But the other thing was the eye-opening replies we got when we showed them how many candidates have dropped out. And it's easier to count the ones that are in now. But like we were door knocking, and one of the people that we talked to said, "Oh yeah, Mayor Pete dropped out." And we said, "You mean Tom Steyer, right?" "No, Mayor Pete, you're not keeping up." And literally, like within, you know, an hour.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, for those who are still planning to vote, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen now after today. But Biden, Bloomberg, Gabbard, Sanders, and Warren are still in.
Tulsi Gabbard is still in?
Yes, she is. She was on the ballot.
Weird. Somebody's buying her. But
yeah. Now, I would recommend, because I think I'm trustworthy on this, but I would recommend definitely double-checking before you put that ballot in the Dropbox.
Well, I'm wondering about the people who have already voted before those folks dropped out. What happens if they voted for the folks who... What happens to their vote?
It goes by the...
Right. Whereas if we had ranked votes, they would.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, the other question I had was, what happens to the delegates that somebody earned.
Oh, like Buttigieg got Iowa delegates.
Yeah. So when they endorse a candidate, does that mean they're throwing their votes to the candidate they're endorsing?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not sure either. If they're bound to vote, you know, in the first round. Change. And yeah, true. I just really don't know either.
These are arcane rules of our crazy way of doing democracy in this country sometimes. Right.
Well, you know, and it might just all come down to the convention.
Yeah. That'd and be interesting.
Well, okay, so I'm so just I'm just Googling this as
hot off
we're
the internet.
Talking. Klobuchar had already won. Buttigieg is finished. Da, da, da. Hang on just a minute. Let me see if I can get to it.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Convention. All right, I'll continue to read here. I'll get an answer
to be
you.
Continued next week. Tune in.
I'll have it for
we'll
you.
We'll talk among ourselves while Truman does the online research.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, I was going to, we can come back to that, but I just thought the United States has signed off on a peace accord with the Taliban, which is just kind of a shocking thing to even read, setting the stage for the withdrawal of most troops from Afghanistan. But true to Trumpian form, the details have already started to trip up the process. Prisoners. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last month had assured Congress that prisoner releases were not going to be part of the deal with the Taliban. Chaos as usual in Trump's foreign policy. And what is it going to take for us to cut our losses and get the heck out of the aptly named graveyard of empires?
Isn't this the knee-jerk reaction where the Trump administration says, I didn't really know the president of Afghanistan. We never really worked together. Or maybe that's just
throws him under the bus.
Wasn't that a Jared Kushner brokered deal?
Oh,
and he neglected to include the Afghan government in the negotiations?
That's right. But he read 22 books.
What the heck was he thinking?
He read 22 books, so it was good.
My goodness.
Dr. Zeus?
You know, to me what this says, and I want to get back to Kevin, because to me what this says is we have hopefully got to get a change of presidency and a change of the Senate so that we can reformulate our government in a way that works a little more smoothly. And Kevin was talking with us after the program last week about actually how close we are strategically to being able to do that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I wanted Kevin to be able to talk about that.
Let's hear about that.
Well, so it's a lot of data. You can imagine a lot of pundits are looking at who's, you know, won last time and so on. But it's interesting if the approach that I'm on right now is if you assume all the blue states in 2016 stay blue, which is a pretty good bet, then on the path to the White House, of how well Trump did in 2016. And it's interesting because the top two of those states, the ones that he just barely won, he is now unpopular by double digits. And that is in Michigan and Wisconsin.
Ah.
So those states seem, and the senator in Michigan, Peters, is popular and so on. So it seems likely that Michigan and Wisconsin are going to be in the Democratic column in 2020. That gets you to 259. So you need 270. The next likely state to go Democratic candidate. Mm-hmm. So then you look at Arizona and North Carolina as sort of the next couple of states that you might want to focus your energy on. And that gives you a margin of 26 electoral college votes. So it's sort of like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and North Carolina. And if you do well in all of those states, it turns out you also have a tie in the Senate. which means that if you get the White House and a tie in the Senate, you control the Senate because the vice president breaks the tie.
Sure.
And then the other sort of wild card right now, Iowa, Georgia, and Kansas. Interestingly, Kansas, where Trump won by 21%, is actually, the pundits are showing, that's an easier Senate flip than Iowa or Georgia right now. Oddly enough.
Well, maybe that has to do with their series of disastrous decisions made by the governor of Kansas, and they were solidly Republican here for a number of years, and got all their policies enacted, and basically drove the state into the ground in about 6 years.
I also hear that Kris Kobach, for the famed voter... what would they call it? Voter fraud commission, right? Mm-hmm. To go find the 3 million people who voted illegally and actually, you know, inflated Clinton's numbers. Apparently, he's not at all well liked in Kansas. And Pompeo, who we probably have no real affinity for, but he decided not to run for Senate in Kansas. So he is apparently more popular. But it's interesting. Iowa is also a possibility where Trump actually won by 9.6% in 2016, but he's negative approval rating by 9% right now.
Wow, that's a huge swing.
And it turns out that Senator Joni Ernst is about a minus 5% negative popularity rating. So I'm working to circulate this kind of logic with other folks to get some feedback and see if we can, you know, like Lynn was saying, if we can put our focus in the right place and really concentrate in doing well in those areas, it certainly looks to me like we have a chance for both the White House and the Senate in 2020, and that's the goal we're going forward with.
Sure.
Can't we do some phone banking from here in those states to help flip the Senate?
We absolutely can.
When you say here, let's not mean the station.
Drop in.
Not on Voice of Home here on
Vashon.
As a private citizen. Yes.
Didn't we say that?
I just wanted to clarify.
Anything and everything we've said, it's not a representative of the Voice of Vashon or
never,
our sponsors.
But you can do postcard writing to get people to register. I've been looking at Reclaim Our Vote, which is postcard writing to people who've been taken off of the voter rolls, typically people of color. They work in states that have over 20% people of color is their goal. That's where they want to put their energy. You can do phone banking. You can do texting. All three of those things you can do, and we can do that right now. And in Arizona, Mark Kelly's campaign, right? Mark Kelly is, his wife was shot, and I can't remember her name right now.
Oh, we'll set it.
It'll come to us.
Oh, yeah, at the rally.
Phoenix.
Gifford, that's Gifford's, right?
Gifford,
yeah.
Gifford, yes,
yeah.
Right.
Yep, yeah, I'm Gabbard comes
to Gabbard.
I know, that's right.
No, it's not Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard. It's Gifford.
It's the Gabbard-Gifford thing. So Mark Kelly, astronaut, who's running against, to unseat McSally. McSally lost to Sinema in 2018. We helped do a lot of phone banking into Arizona in the midterms. And McSally is a senator now because John McCain passed away, and she was appointed to his seat. Right. So, there's, you know, Arizona has a pretty strong Trumpian leaning in terms he won it by 4%. He's not terribly underwater there right now, but the seated senator has this heritage of not being tremendously capable and having lost to Chris and Cinema. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of hope. And as Susan, you say, there's phone banking, texting, and postcard writing that we can do right now.
And I think what's so interesting about what you're saying is, you know, we don't really hear that level of slicing of the details very often. We hear, we're blue, you're red, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
We hear the tough races, you know, well, how are we going to unseat Mitch McConnell? You know, those kinds of things. We hear that. But we don't often hear the big picture at a level of detail that helps you understand how slim the margin might be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to everyone who says, my vote won't count, you know, I just think you have to think more strategically and broader than that. We talk some about You know, it's you're not just voting for yourself, you're voting for your country.
Yes, yes. I like
and,
that. Right.
And how do we take that thinking and even help other states, you know, change sure. voter suppression mm-hmm. or change, you know, the voting rights in that.
I like those, that.
Well, yes, and I had several conversations with young people in South Carolina about that who said, I didn't vote in the last presidential election because I didn't like either one of them. But the bottom line of that is, well, then you voted for Trump. Because if you, I mean, the number of people who didn't vote far outsizes mm-hmm. those who did.
That's
right. So it, the idea is to get the vote out in order to get a more representative government, whatever you vote for.
Yeah.
But yes, you are voting for other people. And we also need to let folks who are convicted felons know that they can vote. A lot of them don't think they can, and there are many states in which they
That's
now can.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, we were canvassing yesterday and knocked on a door a fellow who was about a really huge fellow, tattoos on both arms. We talked about voting. He looked with this sort of dejected look and says, I'm a felon. I can't vote.
Yes, you can.
And we said, oh, have you discharged your LFOs, your legal financial mm-hmm. obligations? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, several years ago. And I said, well, we're knocking on your door because you're a registered voter in the state of Washington. So you need to call and make sure that you do get that ballot. And the look on the man's face went from dejection to hope, I would say.
Oh, it
was awesome.
We fought a long battle to get that changed in this state. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that long ago, maybe 5 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people who still think felons can't mm-hmm.
yes,
vote.
Exactly.
Well, that's
but they
the thing.
Can.
Nobody communicates with them.
That's right.
Truman's
okay.
got something up
okay,
here.
Okay, we only have 3 minutes to go here, guys. I want to throw this out because this is important. The business about delegates, the problem is that they actually are getting delegate slots. They're not getting actual delegates. Those delegates are not assigned until the states have their conventions. And then the delegates are assigned. And one other very important, and the way they get assigned is if the person drops out, then they are redistributed to those who got 15% or more of the vote. So if you got less than 15% of the vote, you don't get any delegates in those.
Right.
But here's the kicker. Buttigieg and Klobuchar have not dropped out. They've only suspended their campaigns.
Oh,
and the
really?
reason they've suspended their campaigns is because that does not allow their delegates to be reallocated.
That's kind of stinky.
Well, but
it's a strategic move.
It is a strategic move.
Thing
it is a placeholder,
them.
And it gets back to the state conventions and then to the national convention where the first round they have to vote for their
wow.
delegates. Are required unless they're super delegates, and then they can vote for whoever they choose.
And the plot thickens.
It is like way more complicated than I even began to believe.
It's like
so you should look this
up. Rube Goldberg way of electing someone.
It's very unusual.
May our fans stick with us through this tumultuous, you know, time.
Yeah.
We'll keep you informed as best as we can understand it.
Yeah, I will work on that a bit.
Yes.
But thank you. That would be wonderful.
Week. And do definitely know that next Tuesday, March 10th, is when we all need to get our ballots in, either at the library drop box or drop it in any mailbox before the pickup on that day, which is typically like 5 p.m.
So then if Klobuchar and Buttigieg have only suspended their campaigns and people voted early for them, those votes might... Still
I don't think
good?
So. No, I don't think so. I will have an answer for you by next week.
All right.
Yeah. I want to revisit, just to reemphasize how much I like what you said, Lynn, and what you reemphasized there, Susan, is that about voting, it's not just my vote. It really is not just my vote. It's our communities. It's everybody.